I immediately am attracted to Joel Embiid at 9-1 to win Eastern Conference Finals MVP. I think that you can make a very strong argument. They are the best team in the Eastern Conference.
Are they too popular of a pick against the Knicks is my only thing.
I mean, maybe, but I also think from a pricing standpoint, I get it, you know? But we'll see game one already by the time this comes out, but 7.5, all that kind of stuff. I mean, maybe you're just fading them off of game seven. They're not a 7 seed, as we can clearly see, because the injuries and suspensions derailed the regular season for them. They might be popular, but sometimes those popular picks come through as well.
This is Pod to the Futures with Mitch Moss and Jonathan Von Tobel on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's up, folks? Welcome in. It is another wonderful edition of Pod to the Futures. Jonathan Von Tobel broadcasting from the bowels of Circa, actually. A little bit of a change of venue here today. Mitch Moss back in his usual spot at home. Mitchell, how we doing? NBA playoffs are into the second round. We'll have some thoughts on the Conference Finals MVPs a little bit more. Baseball, hockey, we are covering all the bases here, pun intended. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, man, good to see you again. You're looking great.
Thanks.
Working out,
I appreciate
like a banshee
that.
Over the last 3 months or so. Good for you, man.
That's right. I was complaining to you right before the pod started. The bench press, it's, you know, I'm trying to break through at a certain benchmark and I can't really get there, but we will see. We'll get there, you know. And actually, I don't want to waste any time. We have lots to get to here, but I was paid a compliment by a CrossFit trainer. It was a very empowering moment. All right. You know, one of those guys that you just run into every day at the gym, you never really talk. And then you realize, like, you know what, we have a lot in common here. And then friendships were made. Not a lot of friendships when competing for a championship in the NBA. Is that a good segue? Although a lot of people would complain that there is friendships and the old NBA was better. So we're not going to get into a ton on these games and series just because by the time we get this turned around and whatnot, a lot of these will get started. Although there's a few on Wednesday that we can hit briefly. And I did want to hit one aspect of a series right at the top, Mitch, before we get into the others, because just wanted to get this out there right away. So by the time people watch this, game one of the Spurs and Timberwolves series will have either already started or be in the books. I think Wyatt's going to try to turn this around here today a little bit earlier. The reason why I want to bring this up is I was, even with the injury questions of Anthony Edwards floating around this series, stunned at the price here that you were going to get 7-1 on the Minnesota Timberwolves to win this series. And so I wanted to put my strategy out there now. We will see if he plays today. He's definitely pushing for it as of this morning, so 9:28 a.m. Pacific time. He was a, quote, significant participant in shoot-around, according to Shams Charania. So we'll see if he actually gets out there. But my thought was that if San Antonio takes them out in game one, I expect he's going to be back. And I would jump on a little bit of Minnesota post game one should they lose as we expect. And I do think 7-1 now is even playable. And I actually think +2.5 at like +155 is playable as well. But were you surprised at this, even with the Edwards news, the way it was priced?
I could not believe the number, even when we thought Edwards was going to be out. When the Spurs opened up at -3,000 to win or even higher, you could find 13-1 in that neighborhood on the Wolves to win, which is just like, again, how does this team continue to get like zero respect? I get the injuries. I understand that. Okay. Edwards, but here's what people get wrong. And they have like the national narrative is so silly to me on this team. Oh, Anthony Edwards is you got to have a superstar in the NBA to make a deep run. They did that to Denver without Anthony Edwards, and they have played like that a lot without that guy. It's like they're lost in the Great North, and people just don't pay attention because it's a small market team. And I hope that they finally realized that this team has had awesome roster construction for like a handful of years now. They've gotten a lot of this stuff right, and they have been one of the deepest teams now in the league 3 years running. What does this tell you about Nikhil Alexander-Walker? Could not even start. He goes to Atlanta, is the most improved player, and a kid like Shannon can't play on the team. Mm-hmm. Now, Finch admitted that they screwed that up. They wanted to play him in the corner. He's like, silly me, I should have the guy, the balls. They have so many guys on the team that they can't even all hit the court. And now you're starting to see when McDaniels is out there and he doesn't have to like be the second fiddle to a guy or even third fiddle to Anthony Edwards, and maybe a guy like Julius Randle, he can dominate offensively and defensively. Like, this team is really freaking good. Back-to-back trips to the Western Conference Finals, and they open up as a 13-1 dog. The Spurs are awesome, but 13-1? What are we doing here?
Yeah, I'm with you on all points, and I think that ties into a bigger picture. By the way, to their depth, they got good news over the weekend about Ayo Dosunmu. It sounds like he's going to be
another kid.
Pretty much ready to go. And you talk about some really good under the radar trade deadline acquisitions. Absolutely fantastic. Dosunmu's freaking awesome, and he fits wonderfully with what they need, especially when Edwards went down. So let's tie this into the big picture here. I texted this to our guys in the Harvard Handicapper group chat, Zach Cohen, who's the host of that podcast, Kelly Bidlin as well, in a numbers game. I want to see what you think about this, because you sound like you're kind of lock in step with me here. And again, we'll see what happens after game one. The odds will change here a little bit. Anthony Edwards, 60-1 to win Western Conference Finals MVP.
Hmm.
What do you think?
Interesting.
I mean, because here's the thing, obviously, you'd have to win this series. And then that would obviously mean, I mean, it would be nearly impossible for him to win Western Conference Finals MVP in a losing effort against the Oklahoma City Thunder. But I do think this team has the depth and the horses to go toe-to-toe with any of these teams in the Western Conference. And Anthony Edwards, if he is going to, if they're going to win it, he would be the guy that is going to lead them there. Again, 60-1, does it shift out to like 80-1, 85-1 if they fall down 1-0 in the series? We'll find out. But Edwards, I think if you're digging a little bit deeper, if you want some of these long shots in a market like this, Ant to me has like the play written all over him.
Well, what about just taking the Timberwolves at 50-1 to win the West? And that way you're going to get a smaller number, but you're also going to get every player on the team then.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought this was Pod to the Futures, not Pod to the Wimps. All right. I want 60-1. I want 65. Well, I want a banger here.
Okay. Could they actually go back to back and beat the Spurs and the Thunder?
And then, I think they can.
Okay. So if so, then how many players realistically on the team can win the award? Would it be that guy and that's it?
I think it's two. I think it's Anthony Edwards. If we're cutting up the pie, I think it's going to be like Anthony Edwards wins it, let's say 75% of the time. Jaden McDaniels, 20%. And we'll add a third. Rudy Gobert, what, 5%? I mean, I'm probably being very, very nice to Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, McDaniels is the other guy because he can do it offensively. And he's 400-1.
Yes. So, I mean, you just sprinkle a little bit on both of them, whatever it is. But I think we're pretty certain that Ant and McDaniels are the two options. And that's about it. I think Bash likes it.
Yeah, give me 1 second here. Yeah, he absolutely loves it. And he listens and watches the podcast every single week. And he cries like this when he thinks the podcast is actually going to be over with, because he wants more of it, much like the audience does. Yeah, so I would think that it would be those two guys with a bullet. And then you do have to leave a little room for the unknown with Gobert, because what if he absolutely neutralizes Wembanyama? And if you said that, I apologize, because I heard Bash coming running in. So there's that angle where he can play. Look at what he did against Joker.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think that's the problem. Like, and I wouldn't even trust Rudy Gobert shutting him down, only because it's not even that. I think he actually can. It's just that I don't trust that media members would give him enough credit that it would actually vote
for
him.
Fair enough. You know? Fair enough. Yeah. I wanted to point this out, by the way. I know this, that some people who listen to this every single week, listen to this podcast here. If you go back to the preseason JBT, we talked about two bets to make. It was available at DraftKings. They were offering teams just to meet in the Western Conference Finals or the Eastern Conference Finals. And we said, there's a real chance the Spurs are going to pop if Wemby stays healthy this year. And at the time, this is back in probably when we recorded in early October, they were 65-1 to play Denver in the Western Conference Finals. We liked that one a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And another one in addition to that was 22-1 just to play Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
So that ticket, obviously, you're sitting here with two teams that are gargantuan favorites, and people were asking me if they should do anything with the ticket. I personally don't think I would. Would you just let it ride at this point?
I mean, I think Minnesota could beat San Antonio.
So
man.
Do I. So, but now that number's gone, though, that 13-1
sure.
is gone.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
If they didn't gobble that up, would you still say, would you take maybe a game and a half or 2.5 games with Minnesota?
Yeah, I mean, you can thread the needle there,
yeah,
especially at that price. I mean, like, we're still sitting at like plus 155-ish, depending on where you shop, for plus 2.5. So I think that would definitely be worth looking at for sure.
I think it's going to be a really good series. Now, I took 14 in game one as well on top of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that they're even without Ant, we'll see if he plays, but I do think that they're going to be very competitive. Finch is very good, and they're a pretty deep team. And defensively, too, I mean, it's going to be awesome to see what they have in store for De'Aaron Fox and others. Really quickly, so we're talking about these Western Conference Finals MVP markets. A couple of folks that chimed in here, Refuse to Lose 2010 up on X. And by the way, folks, you want to get in touch with the show, YouTube, comment section, X at me, JVT at Mitch Moss Radio as well. You know, we'll try to get in as many as we can, and we always appreciate people chiming in. Castle for Western Conference Finals MVP. Got to think if Spurs advance, it's in large part because he locked up SGA. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm all on board. I'll tip my cap big time here to one of the VSIN diehards that we've had since day one, Ian McDonald, who lives in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. He reached out to me, I want to say at least a couple. I can go check my phone because I have it in my account. And he said that, why don't you take a peek at Castle 300-1 to win the NBA Finals MVP? he said, there is a path here, or there's an angle that if the Spurs are really this good and they make the finals, that if Wembanyama would not win the award, if they took it down, like this guy would be the second guy up. Yeah. So I have him in the account at 300, and he's currently, you can still get him at 80 or 75 to 1 to win the conference, as he was talking about the conference. Sure. Why not?
Yeah.
They have drafted so well.
Yeah, they have. I mean, they also, you got to have luck was part of it, like, cause the lottery has fallen in their favor in an insane way the last few years. But to the whole point overall, I mean, like with Castle, when you look at this, I do get a little curious as to the teams. Again, you'll have to evaluate a player on how he plays defensively. So you do wonder if that's going to hold up, because, again, these voters just really want to give it to guys like Wemby. But it is something that I think works. You also have this one. I don't know. Chitoy Cop? Is that how we're doing? Shy Toy Cop?
I think it's Chicago. Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
Chicago. But either way, our guy here, OKC minus 145 to win the championship. Parlay it with, I actually like this a lot, Scotty top 10 at the Players Championship at 3-1.
At that price, it's one way to bump up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because what do you
actually
get better
at these cross-sport props, man?
Well, under that scenario, which bet do you actually like more? Oklahoma City to win the championship or Scotty to finish top 10?
Oddly enough, the 3-1.
No, I'm saying, like, which of the two, though?
That's what I'm saying. No, yeah. The 3-1, Scotty.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, cool. Excuse me.
Combined, it's 3-1.
Yeah. That's my, but yes, of the two, Scotty, for
me
sure.
Me too. Me, yes.
That's a good pairing, though, dude. I like that. When you put those two together and you're at 3-1.
That's a good catch. So yep. Oklahoma City to win the NBA Finals along with Scottie Scheffler, top 10 at the Players, plus $3. Not bad.
Yeah. No, I mean, not at all. You should be in a position to do something with it as well as you kind of move forward there. And Scottie kind of found his form again.
And you only really have to wait another month.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like, we're not waiting, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 months to just sit there on it. I have, actually, both of them are dead because I had a Nuggets-Dodgers, you know, parlay. Nuggets to win the Western Conference Finals. Mm. This was like months ago.
Months
seems
ago.
Like years ago. And I thought that was going to be great. I'm like, I'm going to be on the Dodgers at like 50-1 to win it. And then, yeah, that didn't actually end up happening. All right, let's take our break here. When we come back on the other side, we'll hit Eastern Conference Finals MVP and a little bit of baseball as well. So in-depth on the Western Conference Finals MVP market, Eastern Conference Finals MVP becomes pretty fascinating because I don't know about you, and we've talked about this a lot on this podcast. I've said it on a lot of different of our platforms and whatnot. When the postseason started, I kept saying that the fly in the ointment was clearly Philadelphia. If Embiid was going to be healthy, if Paul George coming off of the 25-game suspension was fresh and the upside of Tyrese Maxey and others, that they could potentially be a team that could win the Eastern Conference. I immediately am attracted to Joel Embiid at 9-1 to win Eastern Conference Finals MVP, Mitch. I think that you can make a very strong argument. They are the best team in the Eastern Conference that is still left right now.
Are they too popular of a pick against the Knicks is my only thing.
I mean, maybe, but I also think from a pricing standpoint, I get it. You know, again, we'll see game one already by the time this comes out, but 7.5, all that kind of stuff. I mean, maybe you're just fading them off of game 7, but that hasn't been as profitable recently. So they might be, but they're not a 7 seed. As we can clearly see, because of injuries and suspensions derailed the regular season for them. They might be popular, but sometimes those popular picks come through as well.
Sure. Let me give you my take on the path here just for a minute. That is, I can't tell you how much I would have loved the Knicks against the Celtics if that was a series.
Yeah.
And it would have been a plus price, and it would have been probably my biggest bet of the entire NBA season. I would have loved the Knicks. Loved them. I think Philly's more difficult than Boston is for New York. And also, there's another thing, too. I bet you the Knicks were sitting back watching that Magic and Pistons series unfold, thinking, please, for the love of God, Orlando, take them out. Detroit's the most difficult matchup for the Knicks in the Eastern Conference.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they get by Philadelphia, I don't think they want to play Detroit. That did not go well for them in the regular season. And that might, and Detroit stunk for the most part in that first round.
Yep.
So I could be dead wrong on all of that, but it's funny the way it breaks sometimes. I'll give you two other. Embiid was awesome. I mean, totally, that thing shifted. And the reason why Philadelphia is here is because he came back. I think VJ Edgecombe is maybe the key to the entire series. Like, if he scores, and I love what he told Nick Nurse the other night. He's just like, and I'm blanking who he was guarding now. It was Derek White. He goes, I want Derek White. I'm going to shut him down in the second half. And it completely flipped because White was so hot in that game. And then that totally flipped. And if he contributes offensively, he's an outlier at 100-1. Now, if you look at the Knicks players, Brunson's the short shot, obviously. What they find here with Cat, can that continue with what took place against Atlanta, where he was like dishing out 10 assists per game? And then will the scoring be there for OG Anunoby again, because Anunoby is 40-1. Guy's freaking awesome.
I think the Cat one's a really interesting one because obviously he's going to be matching up with Embiid, and that's going to be really important throughout this entire series. It's almost going to be like the opposites of one another in the sense of Embiid's going to try to take Cat down low and beat him up, and Cat's going to bring him out to the perimeter and say, all right, big guy, let's see if you can move laterally, and I'm going to start to blow by you, or I can hit threes, do whatever. And operating on the perimeter for Karl Anthony Towns, that could mean that if Joel Embiid's coming out of the paint, Mitch, to your point, there's cuts to the basket he can assist on. There's like so many different things he could do that maybe there is a series in which they beat the Philadelphia 76ers and he's putting up stats in all three categories and he can win that thing at 15-1. Because we know the upside scoring wise for Cat, he can give you a couple of those like 28, 29 games, like 10 rebounds and, you know, be a great performer for them offensively.
Yep. And by the way, this has been a, now that the more I think about it and I'm going down memory lane right now, this has not gone well. This, I think more specifically when Cat was with Minnesota, Embiid dominated him.
Yeah.
And he pushed him around, talked trash. He got into a fight. And that was pretty much it was a one-sided rivalry, I guess, if you will.
Yes. There was the Instagram stuff too as well. Yeah. So yeah. Hopefully that continues here. Any others that you would throw out there? I mean, I guess the other, you call the outlier. I know you said Edgecombe. As I mentioned, Paul George actually kind of got lucky that he got suspended for 25 games
because
he's actually fresh. Yeah, he's fresh now. And, you know, he's not obviously hurt or injured or dinged up. And he is the third option in theory. But a fresh Paul George, where, I mean, you know, your dominant defensive player in OG Anunoby is probably going to take. I mean, I don't know who in this series, probably Tyrese Mack. I mean, no, actually, you probably get Paul George. You wonder what they're going to do there. But either way, you do wonder that. And we should throw out Tyrese Maxey as well. Yeah, because I can foresee quite a few of these games getting into clutch time and Tyrese Maxey doing to Jalen Brunson what CJ McCollum did for him in a couple of games out there.
Totally concur. Yep. There's one guy in the Pistons who could win. That's it.
Correct.
That's it. And I guess
he was awesome in the final three games of that series.
So good. Totally took over. And again, look at what he's working with there. Yep. Not much. And the other team would be your Cavaliers.
Yeah. I mean, it's Donovan Mitchell or nothing. Do you trust that James Harden, if they do this, do you trust that James Harden's going to do enough to win an MVP in the conference finals?
No, you won't want to, you don't, nothing there on Allen or Mobley?
Not really. I mean, Allen looked pretty good there in the end of in game seven, against Toronto. But I mean, I think we're okay there. I don't think that we're going to trust some like pure front court guy like Jared Allen to do enough to win a conference finals MVP. All right, Major League Baseball, let's transition here. One major question. It sticks out when you look at the current standings across all of Major League Baseball, Mitch. What is it?
How many divisions are actually over with already? Am I completely overreacting in early May?
I don't think so. I mean, clearly the Yankees with a 1.5 game lead, it's over.
We should talk to Sal for a minute here. I mean, the lead's only 1.5. This is not sustainable with Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I was going to say the second place team is Tampa Bay.
Right, and the Yankees are going to be getting guys back in their rotation, and their pitching has been absolutely insane so far. I would say that here's the question. The AL Central and the AL West, are those really the only two divisions? And I'm saying that, and the Dodgers only have a half a game lead, and the Cubs are up by two, but that's over the Cardinals and the Reds. Again, completely unsustainable with St. Louis. Mm-hmm. The Cubs, by the way, I looked at betting them to win the National League. They are phenomenal, and they got like Imanaga's having another great season. They've had injuries as well. Their lineup is sick. Their run differential is plus 42 already. That's not Braves territory, but nobody is. I guess the question would be, could the Padres actually be there the entire year and give the Dodgers a run for their money?
Two points really quickly to your point about the Cubs. I think the Edward Cabrera pickup is so underrated.
Yeah.
He has been so freaking good and rock solid for them and showing the potential that we all kind of expected that he was going to have there. So he has been fantastic. And to your point about the Padres, I mean, you usually use this as your benchmark of, is this team going to be able to keep this up? The fact that the Padres are in second place in that division at 20-13 with a negative one run differential here on May 4th, pretty good indicator that you're probably not going to be able to keep this up.
Yep.
So I'm with you in that, like, I'm going to trust that the Dodgers are going to stay there on top. I'm going to trust that the Cardinals are going to fall by the wayside. I guess the fly in the ointment for the Central would be, I do buy Pittsburgh quite a bit. They're 19-16 with a plus 31 run differential.
Yeah.
They should be better. Same thing with Milwaukee. Milwaukee's only three games over, but with a plus 45. Their run differential is better than Chicago's.
That is crazy. And by the way, they lost yesterday, Sunday. Yep. But they finally called up Logan Henderson because they had to, because Woodruff got injured, and he was great. Struck out eight, gave up a couple of runs, six innings though, and they're going to, Chirio came back, got hurt again, but Yelich is supposed to come back. Vaughn, the same thing. Eventually, this team's going to get, that might be the team. Actually, it's funny, the two teams at the bottom right now are probably going to be there as the Cubs' biggest challengers moving forward.
Yeah, like I think that I did this, I think it was like 3 weeks in, because we do our, you know, our overreaction Mondays like you guys do and like a lot of others do. And I think my call me crazy, like 3 weeks into the season, was like the Pirates might be the best team in the division. And they still potentially could be. Yeah. I mean, we know about the pitching. The offense has been way better than I think a lot of people expect.
Yeah, and I have to say that I don't think Skeens has been as good as we thought he was going to be coming into the season.
Right. So that still has to correct itself.
And it will.
Yeah. I would assume so. So I would agree generally with some of your thoughts, too. I mean, these divisions look racked up. And I would also say for the AL West, I have a preseason plus 340 ticket on the Rangers to win that division. I think they can still win that. I mean, well, they've been outscored by a run here so far this season, but they're two games under. So it's right in line with where they should be. Their pitching, I think, should even out. Although Eovaldi, I don't know what's going on. Damn, that was that's been a weird start to the season. He's been getting rocked. But I think Texas still has the horses to pull this division off and win it in the large sample size.
I think the A's are probably for real.
Yeah.
And the Mariners are who we thought they are, right? They're going to have really good pitching the entire year. Hancock gives them 14 Ks on Randy Johnson night. I guess we should have seen that one coming and laddered his K props in that game. But their offense, as the story always goes with this team, they will warm up as the summer heat does as well. And so this is going to be a three-team race probably the entire year. I think the A's are in it. I think the Rangers are right there with them. And so this, you can't rule out Seattle. There's no way.
So as it stands right now with these division prices and where you're at, I mean, the ones that you think that are going to win this thing, and the market would represent a lot of what we're talking about here, right? Dodgers minus 1,100 at DraftKings to win the division right now. Cubs minus 135 to win the division. Let's see. The Mariners still the favorite there. Braves minus 525. Tigers odds on at minus 105. And the Yankees at minus 295. Maybe if you want to parlay some of those big favorites together, that would make some sense. But I think, too, out of all of these teams, I'll say this. The fact that the Reds have better odds at some spots to win that division than the Pirates, I think, is ridiculous. Yeah. And if we're talking about like value and price, I think the Pirates, at plus 750 would be the bet for me.
Well, and always shop around, by the way, because I saw the Yankees earlier today higher than a $4 favorite.
Oh, yeah, really?
So that would mean if you're looking for another team, that would probably be a book that you want to look at because you're going to get better odds with the adjustment there.
Sure, because again, minus 295 of the book that we're referencing here too, so that would make some sense. And I just don't buy it. Like the Reds, their lineup does stink, and they're going to start to fall back down to earth.
Yeah.
You have some questions about the pitching staff. Adam Burke, our own Adam Burke, he's called it the Reds' aggression. He expects it to happen at some point, and I think that's really going to happen here too.
I agree. Yep.
And it's the pricing. All right. Baseball, we have to get to some of the awards in Major League Baseball as well because we have a lot of shots that we can take there on the board. Some guys are shortening up. Two, we have a couple more listener questions as well. So don't go anywhere here. It's Pod to the Futures. So speaking of Paul Skeens, the favorite right now to win the National League Cy Young, despite the fact that he is off to the start that he is off to. 2-1 over at DraftKings. Again, just go shop around. We always reference these. They're easy to pull up. Yoshinobu Yamamoto at 4-1. Chris Sale plus 450. Here's why I wanted to start. Shohei Ohtani at plus 750 to win the NL Cy Young. Clearly, numbers-wise, Mitch, he is in contention for this award the way that he's been pitching. Also, the way they've been handling his hitting when he's been starting, I think they're pushing for him to win this award. You know, I think that is the trade-off. I mean, there's part of him that I think just wants to be ready and focused whenever he is starting to be ready for a postseason run. But I think the other part of this is to show his dominance and to give him the best opportunity possible to win this award and not have to worry about hitting. And I think that's one of his goals this year is to win the NL Cy Young along with an MVP.
I would agree with that. And I think the team aligns with that as well. As you said, I took a little 16-1 a while back on him. And so I also watched a video with David Sampson, who's been on Follow the Money with us many times. He's a former president of the Marlins. And he basically said, rest assured, this is what they're trying to do. Like this, and he's very confident. And he said, this is going to happen. Like he's won everything else. And like selfishly, even for Ohtani, this would be something that nobody in baseball would ever be able to surpass, and he would legitimately go down. He's already the best player. I mean, come on, let's be honest here. He's the best player of all time. I don't even think there's an argument about that. Nobody's ever done it to this level before.
Babe Ruth? What?
So if you add a Cy Young to the mantle, that just solidifies it right there. And his, I mean, he has the talent and his ceiling is Cy Young worthy. And the way they're playing this out right now, with him not batting current or like recently anyway, when he's taking the mound,
yeah,
and he's just completely dialed in. I think this is absolutely live. And now again, good competition here. I wish I had some Chris Sale. Sale should be the short shot right now. 11 Ks over the weekend at Coors. The guy has been phenomenal yet again. And a couple of other guys to keep an eye on. Did Chase Burns figure this out?
Yeah.
Right? Because he's beginning more, like the efficiency has really been there the last couple of starts. And he's not trying, I don't think he's really trying to strike out like 15 guys every game, because his strikeout numbers are down and he's gotten better as a result of that. And I don't think Mizorassi is going to have enough innings.
Sure. By the way, do you know what Chris Sale and Chase Burns have in common?
I do not.
Getting lit up by the Angels, baby. And then, yeah, that's absolutely nothing after that. I would agree with all points. And I'm with you that Burns has maybe kind of slowed down a little bit because his command's better this year, too.
Right.
So it seems like maybe one of the things has been to work on, like, buddy, like, we don't need a million miles an hour every single time.
Yep.
If you work on the command a little bit more, you still have good enough stuff that you're going to be able to strike out guys at a pretty high rate. And sure enough, strikeout rate has dipped. 35.6% last year over short sample size. This year, it's at 28.6%. But the walk rate has cut down a little bit. 8.5 to 8.1, but still an improvement nonetheless for Burns. So I'm with you that both of those guys are going to be up there. We should mention another Dodger, I guess. Ty Glasnow. Do we care about this at all?
Well, how about Roblinski as well?
I mean, I guess Glasnow just has the pedigree.
Yeah.
Is that fair? Like voters would look at him if he keeps this up, that they would be willing to vote for him as well if Ohtani falls off. I mean, again, we're talking about a sub-1 ERA right now for Ohtani. So you're trying to find some shots to take here, because I do think that they're really always going to limit what he wants to do as a pitcher from an inning standpoint.
Yeah, and Glasnow, I mean, his K rate has been phenomenal this year. They win like every start that he, I think he's on the streak right now with the Dodgers, like as a team, they just win like every start going back to last year, several in a row. So if he stays healthy, like he, again, you talk about ceilings for some of these guys, he's always like had that Cy Young stuff. It's just, is he going to have a stretch this year where he misses 9 starts and he,
yep,
you know, has a couple of injuries and he can't go, which would obviously knock him out of the race at that point. So he could do it. Their staff is so good. I apologize if I asked you this question before, because I know I brought it up on the air to Paulie. Is there a world that we live in which Ohtani could win the Cy Young but not win the National League MVP?
Yeah, if he stops hitting. Like if he just completely stops hitting.
And it hit the floor just bottoms out on him.
No, I just mean like they announce that he is, yeah, like he's removed from the lineup. I just don't see a scenario. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't see a scenario if he is hitting every day while pitching at a caliber to the point where he's going to win Cy Young. How in the world is that not the most valuable player?
I know.
Every 5 days we have a Cy Young start from this guy. Oh, and by the way, even if he's only, let's say he just hits like 240, you know, with like 25 homers or whatever it is, like that's still an incredible performance over the course of a year for a team that is going to be, we assume, the best team in the National League and Major League Baseball.
Okay, so he hits 220, 19 home runs, 68 RBIs, and 90,
how many stolen bases?
95 runs scored.
With like what, 10, 15, 20 stolen bases? Like, and then he pitches to a Cy Young level?
He's got 200 strikeouts, an ERA of 1.6, and he wins 15 games.
That's insane. Good.
I was going to say, their other dudes are having like phenomenal years in the National League, but they have no chance, right?
Yeah. It reminds me of one of the years that he was in the American League with the Angels, and I think it was Mike, it was the year that he was up against Vladimir Guerrero to potentially win MVP. And I know Mike Palm had brought this up and he's like, well, he's got an ERA over 3. And I'm like, Mike, he's got an ERA.
Yeah,
right, like, yeah, like, yes. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
You know? So even that, like, that's kind of the reverse of what we're talking about, which was, yeah, he was pitching, but he was pitching to an average level. It doesn't matter. He was pitching, man. Like, that to me is so crazy that I don't think baseball writers would overlook that. Unless he's hitting like 195, you know, over the course of all year long, maybe you have a shot.
I do, because that's the world that has to exist if you're going to bet a guy like Ellie De La Cruz to win the MVP or some other guys that I have on the list, but they're not even worth talking about because what are the odds really that plays out like that and Ohtani doesn't win both?
My question for you is, we're talking about baseball awards really quickly. NL Rookie of the Year, Moises Ballesteros again with the homer over the weekend. This kid's been hitting the ball really well for Chicago Cubs to the point, you know, we're talking about Chicago in the big picture standpoint. He's been one of the great finds for them here in this lineup. He's been very, very good. 7-1 to win National League Rookie of the Year. Sal Stewart, obviously, off to his great start. Nolan McLean, J.J. Weatherholt. But is the gap from Stewart to Ballesteros that large that maybe he would have no shot here? Because for those who haven't seen it, I mean, Ballesteros is putting up some pretty solid numbers so far. He's hitting .317. He's already got 6 home runs, 18 runs driven in. He's not going to be a threat on the base paths at all, but still, he's hitting the ball really well. And I would think that Stewart, with as well as he's hitting it, still isn't like a massive threat.
I mean, we have 5 months of baseball left.
Yeah.
So, I mean, by the time we're recording in June, that kid for the Cubs might be the short shot.
Right. Yes.
And it could be shorter than that.
Yes.
So, and I think this ties into, I gave up like following baseball cards and like collecting them and buying and selling them like a while ago. Mm-hmm. That's when I had a great pulse on all the rookies, because you want to have like rookie cards for all these guys and track it.
Sure.
I think if you did both, like they coincide, right? Because if you follow baseball, the baseball card market, you're going to have a good pulse on guys that you want to bet to win Rookie of the Year.
Oh, really?
I think so, yeah. And I don't. So, and I think with that, kind of like that's why I don't really pay attention to the market. I'm not up on, I play fantasy just like you, but I'm not diehard into the whole rookie scene.
Yeah. I mean, the only reason why I find out some of these guys is, like you said, like fantasy baseball, I'm just grabbing dudes that are rookies at the back end of our drafts, just so I can see if I can get like a keeper for next year that'll be worth it. And Ballesteros might just be that. Last couple of minutes here before we get to the National Football League and a couple of other listener questions. Anything in the American League MVP market? We've talked a lot about Yordan Alvarez. He's down to plus 250. So we talked about him being worth a target here. Mike Trout, again, not worth it. 22-1. We hit this when he was kind of in the depths of his power and he was hitting the ball extremely well and the Angels were playing a little bit better, but you figured they were going to fall off, and they have. Do we expect, let's tie this back into some of the division bets. If you're somebody like Seattle to rise, they're only 2.5 games back in the AL West. Would that be somewhere you're looking like a Julio Rodriguez or others? Like, where are we looking in the AL MVP market outside of Judge potentially?
I guess if you're going to look at somebody on Seattle, it'd be him. There's no way I would get invested in Cal Raleigh. First of all, he's struggling big time. Couldn't win it last year. What would ever give you an indication that he could actually win it this year then? I'd like to have a slice of Ben Rice. I do not, although he left the game over the weekend. He hit another home run. Day to day. I think
22-1.
22-1 now, huh?
Yeah.
We know people who have him, right? Will Hill has him. Mike Montesano, they have him at a huge number, like 150-1. Great ticket in pocket. Mm-hmm. If the Yankees win 100 games, Judge stays healthy the entire year, what does Rice have to do to beat Judge out from his own team? I don't even know if he can.
Sure. I mean, Judge is even really still hitting the ball particularly well. I know he's got 13 homers already, but like batting average is down so far this year. Strikeout rate's up. So you do wonder if, and his walk rate's down. Now, this could all even out. We're only talking about, 34 games in so far. So that could all correct itself. But Judge has not been an unstoppable machine so far this year.
No, but he's also, I think he's on pace for like 60 home runs still.
This mother, I use him my first overall pick fantasy-wise, and this is the year he decides to hit under 300. He better hit those 60 home runs, I'll tell you that much right now. Got off to a great start. Now he's going to pay for it. All right. Well, yeah, I'm with you. Like Rice, it's hard when you're sitting now at the current market price. It's always fun to look at the sexy guy and go like, hey, man, like I want to jump in on this. When you're behind the eight ball, like you said, Montesano and others, I think that really works, but not so much. Yeah. National Football League on the other side. So we saw Fernando Mendoza out here in Vegas. He had the rookie press conference. He's out. He's not going to the White House because he's got to focus on training camp and rookie camp at that. Said he's the last guy on the roster. He's doing all the right things. But it's a good time to start talking about some of these starting quarterbacks. We do have some markets up for week one starting quarterbacks. But let's start with Mendoza, though, because Cousins is a $2 favorite to be the Raiders starting quarterback week one. Mendoza plus 168. Any other quarterback is 20-1. Vegas Maddie asked, when will Mendoza start over under week? Mitch, what do you think? Because I'm quite certain you and I covered this last week on this podcast in the sense of betting him for rookie of the year. The Raiders do not want him to play. If Fernando Mendoza doesn't play a snap in the regular season outside of like a meaningless week 18, I think the Raiders are very happy because that means the season went relatively well.
Sure. Now, to answer his question, I actually need to wait until the schedule is released.
Sure.
To give you maybe a better idea, because then it'll play into how difficult is it overall? When's their bye week going to drop? Because what if they, like if their bye week is week 7 and it's a totally front-loaded schedule, right? And they just play, and Mahomes is back. And like it's the Chiefs once and they get all three teams in their division and they take on their most difficult non-divisional teams right away. Well, if the Raiders are 1-6 going into their bye, then maybe it would be like, okay, that's it for Kirk Cousins. We're going to go to Mendoza at this point. So, and by the way, they Pro Football Talk said this last night. I guess the league is thinking about pushing the schedule release back to like the week of May 18th. Which,
why?
That I don't know. I only saw the headline. Silly me. I should have clicked on it. But also, that could disrupt things too when it comes to like circus contests because they like to have, they already think that they know when they're going to announce the Survivor stuff. Well, sure. If that thing, if they don't know the actual schedule, well, they're not going to be able to do that then.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, I didn't put those two things together. So that is a good point because you're waiting for that to see what that's going to look like here from that perspective. I think it does matter a little bit what the schedule looks like, but I also think that the Raiders are, like, I kind of buy what they're selling in the sense of they don't want him to start.
Yeah.
So it's going to be pretty late if he does start. I'm thinking double digits at the very least. And I made fun of Stormy for this about the Jackson Dart thing last year because a lot of people are going to tell you, well, you wait until he's ready. Like, well, there's no microwave timer. Like, you're not going to walk into like the camp one day and just be like, and Kubiak's going to be like, you know, Fernando, you look a little different. I think you're ready.
The hot pocket's done.
Yeah, right.
Dive into it.
So it's not perfect. It also depends on Cousins' health. If he gets hurt early, then obviously that's going to matter too, and he's going to get in there. So I think Cousins minus 200. I think you can make the argument that's a very fair price. You're just betting that he's going to be healthy coming out of camp,
right?
And that's about it,
right?
For week 1,
and you probably don't want to make that bet on May 4th when the league is still, you know, not even close to being starting.
Okay, these other interesting, these other markets, are pretty interesting. I'm going to rattle through these really quickly, and then we can get to the ones that you think stick out so far. Jacoby Brissett, a minus 330 favorite to be the starting quarterback week 1 for the Cardinals. Gardner Minshew, plus 420. Carson Beck, plus 750. The Falcons, Tua Tagovailoa, minus 125. Penix, minus 102. Trevor Siemian at 80-1. The Browns, Deshaun Watson, minus 136. Shedeur Sanders, plus 108. Dylan Gabriel, 55-1. Taylor Green, 80-1. Patrick Mahomes is a minus 720 favorite for the Kansas City Chiefs. Again, we have this knee injury that we're talking about that you're recovering from. Fields at 5-1. Any other quarterback, 35-1. And then you get to the Steelers. Any other quarterback, minus 670. Howard, 6-1. And then Will Howard, that is. Mason Rudolph, 15-1. Drew Aller, 18-1. And, of course, the assumption being any other quarterback would be Aaron Rodgers. But of these week 1 starting quarterback markets, is there one outside of the Raiders that stuck out to you?
So they are pricing Patrick Mahomes around 90%. I'll round up. It's like 87.8% that he's going to be the week 1 starter. If you check the timeline, it kind of checks out. But minus 720 is pretty close to like 100%. It's not 100%, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's pretty high.
Yeah, it's very high. Should it really, truly be that high of a number for him to be the week 1 starter? What if he has a setback? What if that timeline is just off by a couple of weeks? Then Fields is 5-1. They signed him for a reason. I don't think it would be any other quarterback, right? It would be Fields.
No.
And that's it. Like he'd be the one that would be maybe worth a sprinkle at 5-1.
I would say so. I think the pricing would say I would be in there. Because the other part of this logic is too, is I mean, just Andy Reid is a good enough offensive coach that he's going to get, I think, a good amount out of Fields in this skill position group that like they're going to be pretty solid.
In Andy, we
Mahomes.
Trust, no doubt.
Yes. I also, to your point, you do wonder what the schedule looks like at the beginning of the year. Because if some of your easy games are front-loaded, if you're Kansas City, then you're probably thinking that you could give Mahomes some time to come back and get ready and wait for an extended week, whatever it is. So we'll see how that breaks down because, you know, if they've got like an early Thursday game, whatever it is, then you can use that like mini bye to get Mahomes back in and ready to go if that's going to be the case. Mm-hmm. So I think Fields at 5-1. For those who are listening who missed this over the week, Mary Kay Cabot made some headlines. She covers the Cleveland Browns. She had noted that Watson took the lead over Shedeur Sanders in this latest voluntary camp, and she believes that the Browns should and will start Deshaun Watson when we get to week 1 of the NFL season, a lot of time from then, but thoroughly believes in reports that Deshaun Watson is ahead in this race. And I think that makes some sense. Sanders wasn't really that good. Gabriel, we know what that is. I mean, you're paying him a ton of money. It's like one of those things. It's actually, people wonder why Stephen A. Smith is all over the place. It's because they pay him a lot and they're like, dude, we got to use you. I think it might be a similar case here where the Browns are just like, bro, like we're paying you a ton of money. We got to see if we got something here. We might as well use you.
Okay. I like the analogy, by the way. So when this story first broke, our buddy, Weston, guy in the cornfields, mm-hmm. he sent me over the tweet and he said, basically, should we have taken a peek at Watson to win comeback player of the year? Let go?
No. No shot.
You don't think so? So
they're not going to vote for him.
But here he and I went back and forth on this. That's like 6 years ago now.
Doesn't matter. I don't think that matters.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Because here's the thing. I don't think he's done anything that really has redeemed him. You know what I mean? Like he actually has kind of been an ass since the whole incident has happened. I don't think any voter wants that on their ledger that they would vote for him to win comeback player.
He hasn't gone out there and saved puppies from a burning building or...
or a car, allegedly, or like some former NFL reporters.
Yeah, right. Or done stuff at like hospitals to help sick people or anything like that and make it, hey guys, I take back what I did. Right. I was an awful human being, but now I swear to God I'm on the right path.
Like he's actually kind of acted like a victim in some instances, and I think a lot of voters would hold that against
him. They did screw up his whole game plan, did they not?
Yeah.
Like the PR, yeah. The PR was just, it's never not been messy. The English there is awful, but you know what I'm saying. So by the way, that's a loaded market, by the way, the ton of good guys. So, but it was 75-1 too on Watson.
Yeah.
For comeback.
I mean, yeah, it's a long price. I can understand why you would want it. I just think there's that outside noise that would maybe there's going to be, I'll tell you this, or I'll put it this way. Can you guarantee that there's going to be at least one voter that would do that, not vote for him because of it?
Yes, right? There was a voter a couple of years ago who said, I'm absolutely not voting for Aaron Rodgers to win the MVP because of the vaccination stuff.
Right. So then there's probably going to be more than just one. This is like my whole point. You're really setting yourself behind the eight ball.
And we just went through the whole NBA Rookie of the Year thing. So it's voters that we're talking about. So, okay.
Really quickly, before we get to some early MVP observations, and you have Defensive Rookie of the Year observations, are we doing anything with the Steelers? Do we trust that Aaron Rodgers is going to be back? He's doing this song and dance again. It's absolutely ridiculous. I don't know why people keep defending him. Like, are we trusting that he's going to be back?
I have no opinion. I tune it out, to be honest.
Okay. All right. NFL MVP. Quarterbacks at 100-1 or better. Malik Willis, 150-1. Michael Penix and Tua, both at 175-1. Geno Smith, 250, as is J.J. McCarthy, Jacoby Brissett, and Kirk Cousins. I think there is one obvious candidate here amongst them. Do you know who it is?
Well, McCarthy?
No.
Willis?
No.
No, they're going to be so bad. Would it be Penix?
Same team.
Tua.
Yeah, buddy. Mm. Come on now. I think that system is going to be good. I'm a Stefanski believer all the way through. I think he's going to get the most out of him playing indoors. I think it's going to happen. I think that they're a long shot, you know, NFC ticket as well. I think that he is going to be able, Stefanski that is, to kind of reestablish the career, reinvigorate the career for Tua Tagovailoa.
I will point this out. Books have adjusted, by the way, odds to win the MVP over recent years because there are several quarterbacks at 100-1 or below in previous years that would have been in this 150, 200, 250-1. Yep. But I think they've also, I'm not going to name names here because I want to still see if like books will open that don't have like these players listed yet, maybe at higher numbers. But in previous years, I was able to grab, you know, kind of projecting, like, I think we're going to get a career year out of this running back. They're going to be really good this year. Your guy, Jonathan Taylor, 4 or 5 years ago, I had at 500-1 to win the MVP, and he was in the mix in December. National media was saying this guy's the MVP. Didn't win, but you know, was in the mix. The best running backs in the league today are like 100-1.
Yeah.
And running backs don't win the award. So they are not offering 300, 400, 500-1 like they were. Just I had Derrick Henry the year they had 2,020 touch. I had him at like 500-1 as well. Huge numbers on him.
Really quick, we got 30 seconds. You want to give us the Defensive Rookie of the Year play?
Yeah, because we were getting asked about this. Jacob Rodriguez, is he a week one starter for Miami or does that not matter? I would look at him. Maybe he can be Schlesinger all over again this year. And yep. I'll bring up a name next week that's 100-1 or higher that will not move. He's only available right now at two different books, and hopefully he's up at more books next time.
The rare 7-day tease. Mm. How about that?
Oh, people are going to be waiting the entire time.
I would say tune into your radio dials, but actually these are going to start being replayed now. So
yes,
you can check
that
out late at nights as well. So that's why we changed the format up a little bit. Somebody asked, why do you guys always up against it? I would listen to this for 2 or 3 hours. Well, we're contractually obligated to keep it to about an hour. So you'll listen to these at night and more. Find it wherever you get your podcasts as well. Wyatt, we appreciate it as always. He's in the room next to me. We'll talk to you next week here on Pod of the Future.